Welcome to the Sports Zone on Huntley Community Radio, WHRU-LP 101.5 FM. I'm Anthony Collada, and we are back with an episode. We took a few weeks off from our Sports Zone show, but we are back. We've got NFL news. We've got Chicago Bears. We've got the Bulls. We've got some NCAA football. So, packed show. We're back. Let's get into it. And as usual, with our best thing in sports this week, and I am going to go with all of the one-handed catches that we saw in the NFL games over this past weekend on Sunday. Stephon Diggs had a fantastic jumping grab where he just snagged the ball right out of midair with one hand against the Vikings. I believe it was in like the second or third quarter. Cortland Sutton for the Denver Broncos pulled off a nice one-handed catch himself. Rondale Moore for the Arizona Cardinals pulled in a fantastic ball down the left sideline, just reaching his left arm out there while the right arm was being held by the defender. Pulled that one in, but the best one of the day, quite possibly the best catch of the year, best catch of the decade, you could even go best catch ever. And that one goes to Justin Jefferson, the wide receiver for the Minnesota Vikings. He went up with one hand, palmed the ball in the air, while the defender had two hands around the ball. They both came down, both had possession. So there were three hands completely around the ball as they're going down. And Jefferson's arm almost gets pulled behind him while he's still holding the ball. And then all of a sudden comes up with the ball in his hand. It truly one of the most amazing catches that I've ever seen. It rivals those catches that we saw from Odell Beckham Jr. years ago, the David Tyree helmet catch in the Super Bowl for the Giants years ago. So this one, the George Pickens one earlier in the season, couple there that are in that same conversation, but I don't know. I think I've got to give the best catch ever to Justin Jefferson after that catch on Sunday. So best thing in sports goes to all four of those receivers were their one-handed catches, but nothing more than Justin Jefferson. And as we stay in the NFC North, we take a look at the Bears matchup this week as they took on their division rival, the Detroit Lions. And this was a game that I think a lot of Bears fans, I think the Bears players themselves are going to think that they let this one get away. Throughout the season, it's kind of been to the point that it's okay to see the Bears lose some games. You want to see some promise out of the offense. You want to see Fields being successful. And, hey, if you lose a couple of games here and there, you're going to continue to jump up into the draft board. And then that leaves a lot of possibilities open, whether you get a top five talent in the draft or you end up trading back and stockpiling picks. So the wins, the losses don't necessarily matter that much, but losing a one-point game to the Detroit Lions, especially the way that they lost it, it wasn't great. Some positives in the game. The offense put up 30-plus points again. That's now 3 weeks in a row. And in my 22 years of life, I don't know if I've ever seen the Bears offense put up 30-plus points in three straight games. It's especially over the last 5-10 years even that points have been a struggle for the Bears offense over the years, and Justin Fields all of a sudden has jump-started this offense. He clearly looks like the best player on the field anytime he plays, no matter who he's playing against. And in this game on Sunday against the Lions, he proved that again, going 12 of 20 passing. He had 167 yards through the air, two touchdowns, one interception that we're going to get to, and then he added 13 carries for 147 yards. Two touchdowns, including a big 67-yard touchdown that actually came right after that interception. So a nice bounce back there for Fields, but just another game where you can tell he's slowly starting to come along with the arm a little bit, but he's clearly got the athleticism. He's the fastest player on the field, most athletic, and he's just out there making plays happen, whether it's receivers not getting open, offensive line not blocking, or just designed runs. The offense is doing a great job of getting him the ball and allowing him to go out in space. And then he's just so fast, he outruns the rest of the defense, and he makes plays with his feet, picks up a lot of first downs with his legs on third down. So you could tell that Fields, he's starting to come along. You want to see the arm kind of progress along with that. I think it has. But, you know, what's going to help with the passing progression is looking at guys like Cole Kmet, who has continued to play well over the last few weeks, kind of like the offense has. You know, one goes, the other goes. This week against the Lions, once again, Kmet had 4 catches, 74 yards, 2 touchdowns, and I honestly think that he could have had a third one had the Detroit Lions defender coming across the field had not run into Kmet. Basically, they gave him a Charlie horse. They need him right in the thigh, and he went down, and there wasn't a defender within 20 yards of him. I mean, he would have had to catch and run probably 40, 50 yards, so he might have gotten caught. But, I mean, another big play that would have been wide open for him. He's continuing to get open. He's starting to show some reliability with the hands, and he's really starting to find the end zone. 2 touchdowns this week against the Lions. He's got 5 now in his last 3 games. So coincidence that all of a sudden the offense starts scoring and now you get your big tight end, your security blanket involved, and you start getting things going. So you want to continue to see these progressions. You want to see Fields get that chemistry down with Kmet. You want to see it come back with Mooney. It hasn't been there that much this year after he was basically the only target last year. You want to see guys like Chase Claypool, Byron Pringle get involved. But, you know, Kmet, former second-round pick, this was basically his like last year to really prove that he can be an NFL player. And he's showing out this year, especially the last 3 weeks. So you want to continue to see that. And then another bright spot on this Bears team came from the defensive side of the ball in Jack Sanborn, who he led the Big Ten in tackles last year, stood out in the preseason, and he's been thrust into the starting lineup ever since Roquan Smith got traded. And this week he had 12 tackles, 2 sacks, and he had an interception called back on what was a really bad called penalty. I mean, they called a hands to the face on Jalen Johnson. He punched him right in the shoulder pads, right in the shoulder, right where you do it. It's perfect technique. Receiver falls down. We get the interception. They call it back. Bad penalty, but Sanborn, he's filling in nicely for Roquan Smith. You never really replace a guy like Smith, but he's filling in nicely, and hopefully he's another one of those guys now that can be there for next year's team. And then as for the ugly, the bad for this game, the penalties was far and away the biggest storyline of this game. Now, you can argue that the refs kind of had it out for the Bears. I mean, here, you look at the Bears, they had 9 penalties for 86 yards to the Lions, just 2 for 15. Now, I'm not one to really put games on referees. I do think that there were a lot of bad calls against the Bears. Mentioned that hands of the face. There were several holding penalties that pretty ticky-tack. I think there was a no-call pass interference on Kmet down the left sideline that could have been called. And then, you know, as I mentioned, that hands of the face wiped away an interception. So a big play there. Here, I don't know how much it would have changed things, but we've seen it over the last several weeks. It seems like it's every year almost that just some calls don't go the Bears' way, but you've got to find a way to get past that. Another bad play was the interception from Fields that we talked about. Pressure up the middle. Fields was rolling out, and nobody was open. I think he was just trying to throw it away. He might have just been trying to do too much. But either way, he sailed it way over Kmet's head, and Jeff Okuda, the corner for the Lions, actually the former teammate of Justin Fields at Ohio State, it, right in his hands, and he ran it back for a short, like, 25-yard touchdown. Not a great play from Fields. He acknowledged it post-game, said it's never going to happen again. You love the ownership, and, you know, you hope it doesn't happen again. Couple things that stood out to me. Where was Chase Claypool this week? I understand not being in the game much last week. You know, got to learn the playbook and whatnot, but here, wide receivers, they run the same routes. You don't necessarily need to know the offense. Run the route and go to a spot. You could do that more than 19 times in a game and see more than 2 targets. He played 31% of the snaps. You traded a second-round pick for this guy, and all he's got to do is go out, run a fly route and a slant route and a post route. should have seen him on the field more. I don't understand why you didn't, but you've got to see more production. Got to see him on the field more. I just don't understand it. And then on the defensive side of the ball, the pass game, the corner's still no good. Amon-Ra St. Brown tore the Bears defense up. 10 catches, 119 yards. And Jalen Johnson, he showed promise rookie year. He's battled some injuries, kind of taking a step back. He's got to find it. He's got to be that guy at corner for the Bears. And then a quick note on Fields. He is now number 6 in rushing in the NFL. He's ahead of guys like Aaron Jones, Dalvin Cook, Travis Etienne, Miles Sanders. These are all running backs. And Justin Fields, number 6 in the NFL with 749 total yards. And just in the last 2 weeks, he's got 325 yards. That's the most by any quarterback ever on the ground. 3 touchdowns, including 2 runs of 60-plus yards. So, you know, we mentioned it. He's fantastic with the legs. Now we got to see that arm come along with it. Next week, the Bears have another fairly easy matchup with the Falcons. They're in Atlanta. Atlanta plays well at home. They've played these teams well this season. So we'll see. But, you know, it's another game that the Bears, you want to see constant progress out of them. And as we switch over in Chicago to the Bulls, through the first 14 games of the season, sitting right around 500 at 6-8, LaVine has played 10 of the 14 games, not really playing in the second game of the back-to-back doubleheaders right now. Eventually, as the season progresses, you're going to have to see him play. I mean, playoff time, he's got to play every game. So it's knee maintenance, but you want to see him in almost every game, and he's not right now. Hopefully he does, and hopefully it is just a maintenance thing. Ayo Dosunmu, the starting point guard filling in for Lonzo Ball this season, I think he's been great. He really showed some promise last year in his rookie year, and to start the season this year in 13 games, he's averaging 11 points, 3 assists, 4 rebounds. He's shooting almost 50% and 35% from 3. All of those stats are something that's really going to play into Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Nikola Vucevic, who's got 9 double-doubles on the season. So I do think Ayo really brings the team together. You can't really replace Lonzo Ball and just everything that he does, especially being at 6'6". But Ayo, he's really filling in nicely and taking a hold of that starting point guard spot. And a couple players off the bench that have been nice additions this season. Goran Dragic is averaging 10 points off the bench. He's been a nice spark for the bench unit, especially with Kobe White out. And Andre Drummond became the 52nd center all-time with 10,000 points. He hit that milestone on Sunday. So this was another great addition for the Bulls. He really gives the Bulls that backup center to give Vooch a break and still have that big rebounding presence. And you are listening to Huntley Community Radio on WHRU LP 101.5 FM. And as we kick over to the NFL, we already saw possibly the best catch ever in this Minnesota-Buffalo game. But honestly, the Minnesota-Buffalo game might have been the best football game ever? Question mark? Maybe that might be a little bit of a stretch, but I mean, in recent memory, I don't know how you pick another one. Buffalo, they went up 17-7 midway through the second quarter, and it was like, oh, okay, Bills at home, here they go. And then right before halftime, Minnesota, they were able to kick a field goal, maybe bring things a little closer, but the Bills came back. Gabe Davis scored a touchdown with 32 seconds, and now it's 24-10 going into halftime. Looked like it was all Bills, but then you come right back out of half, and flip script, and it was all Minnesota. Dalvin Cook really took off, and he really got the comeback started late in the third quarter with his 81-yard touchdown gallop, and he got a nice assist block there from Justin Jefferson along the left side that really sprung him open, and he was just off to the races. And then they followed that up with a fullback dive from 3 yards out for CJ Ham, and then you know, the Bills, they got a defensive stop. They were right there on the goal line. Couple minutes left. All they got to do is get out of their own end zone. And instead of just taking the safety down Buffalo's up 3. You take the safety. You're still up 1. You punt the ball back with, I don't know, a minute or so. Instead, they decided to try to run a quarterback sneak from their own end zone, and Josh Allen fumbles the football. The Vikings pick it up in the end zone for a touchdown. So now Minnesota's up 30 or so seconds left. Buffalo, they're able to go down the field, kick the field goal. They go to overtime, and then Buffalo, they got the stop. Or no, I'm sorry. They kicked the field goal in overtime for Minnesota. And then the Bills, they get the ball right back. Allen leads them right down the field. They're in the red zone. They can almost smell the victory. And then Josh Allen throws it right to Patrick Peterson in the end zone. Goes down. Game over. Vikings win. Possibly the best football game I've ever seen. Just really back and forth. And as a Bears fan, I would have liked to see the Bills win. But fun game, back and forth. We saw a lot of great plays. And Super Bowl preview, perhaps. You know, Vikings, Bills, they're two teams atop of their conferences right now. So something to look forward to as the season progresses with these two teams. And the NFL, they played their first game in Germany this week with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defeating the Seattle Seahawks 21-16. And this was actually the first time that two teams that were leading the division played each other outside of the United States. You recall a couple weeks back, Packers and the Giants, this is the first time that both teams were over 500. Well, now you've got your first two teams that were actually leading their division. So again, with the, you know, continuing to put a good product out there for the rest of the world to see. Brady, the GOAT, 258 and two touchdowns. Geno Smith, 275 and two touchdowns. He's been a great bright spot for this Seahawks team, and I think you could make an argument for Pete Carroll as coach of the year. You trade Russell Wilson and you're left with Geno Smith at quarterback, and you don't have a whole lot of else going on. They're leading the division, they're winning games, and they're hanging tight. Seahawks, huge story for this season. As we kick over to the NCAA with football, a couple big games worth a note. Bama, Alabama, the 9 seed after their loss last week. They held on over Ole Miss, and it was close there for a second. They only escaped 30-24 with the win, but they were losing, I think, double-digit points at one point. But, you know, Bama, not a team that can afford to lose multiple games in the season. They've already lost one, and they find themselves outside of the top six. They got to continue to win. Playing these teams tight, they need some big wins. The top six, though, they stay relatively the same. Georgia's still up atop after their 45-19 win over Mississippi State. Ohio State's in the 2 spot with their win over Indiana. Michigan defeated Nebraska 34-3 to stay in the 3 spot. TCU defeated their Texas rival 17-10 to stay in the 4 spot. And then Tennessee and LSU round out the top six just outside of the playoff picture. So still a couple more weeks to go in the college football season, but definitely worth paying attention to these standings as we head down towards the college football playoffs. And a quick sad note that we need to talk about. 3 University of Virginia football players were killed in a campus shooting on Sunday night. 2 other students were injured. They were on their way back from a school field trip of some sort, and it was actually another former, or it was also a football player that was the gunman. I believe it was 3 juniors that were shot, and then a sophomore running back, I think, was who the shooter was. But he has been taken into custody, and whatever's going to happen to him is deserved. But, yeah, it really sucks that, you know, you go to this event for school. You're with your teammates. Your other teammate. And it's just not a good situation. And, you know, prayers out to all of their families. And then to wrap up our show, we have some UFC fights over the weekend. And they were fantastic. I'm not a huge advocate for buying pay-per-view, especially with the market on bootleg streams. But if you forked over your $70 for this pay-per-view on this card, I think you could be happy and you could sleep well thinking you got your money's worth. I mean, the whole, even the prelims, the fights leading up to the main card that you actually pay for, they set the record for most first-round knockouts. They had 7 total first-round knockouts in the prelim fights, which tied the record, and then I believe they had one in the main card. So record for most total or first-round knockouts. The first 2 fights on the main card, they were okay, but they really turned up the heat when Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler went in for the middleweight belt, I believe, or the middleweight fight. They didn't fight for a belt, but 2 guys that are atop the division, they fought for the belt several times. Chandler came over from the Bellator, another high-profile name, and that first round probably was the best first round of UFC fights that I have ever seen. My jaw hit the floor at 1:30 remaining in the first round, and I didn't pick it up until the second round started. Like, it was a fantastic fight. Just 2 guys in there that they had one goal, and it was to escape and have the other guy not. Like, neither one of these guys were going down to a decision. They were going in there to beat each other up and who can knock who out. And Dustin Poirier, after, I do think it took 3 rounds, but Poirier did eventually just wear Chandler down, and Chandler was a battered mess. Nose was bleeding, face all bruised up and mangled, and there was one part of the fight that Chandler was on top of Poirier, and Chandler, what he described it as was, when you've got to breathe, you got to do what you got to do. And what happened was, is he blew a whole chunk of, like, you know, clotted up blood in your nose. You've ever get a bloody nose and you got that little, like, that snot or whatever stuck in there, just dropped it right on Poirier's face. It was one of the most nasty things I've ever seen. But Poirier, no problem with it. You know, he said that's fighting. The part that Poirier did have a problem with, however, though, was the couple mouth hooks. I'm not exactly sure what they call it, but a couple mouth hooks that Chandler attempted on Poirier. And basically what Poirier was saying was that when Chandler was on his back, he was reaching around and grabbing the inside of his mouth to try to pull the chin up to be able to slide in the chokehold. So there was a little bit of talk back and forth during and after the fight on that. Chandler, he did kind of own up to it, said, yeah, you know, I'm not dirty, I didn't mean to do that, whatever. Who knows? Didn't really play a huge role in the fight. Poirier ended up winning. So yeah, that was only the 3rd fight. There were still 2 more left on the card, and both of which were championship fights. You had Zhang Wei Li. She is a fighter out of China who has been fantastic every fight I've ever watched, against Carla Esparza, who is actually the champion who beat Rose Namajunas. And if you keep going back, Zhang lost the belt to Rose. So then Zhang is trying to fight back for the belt against Carla Esparza, and it went about how most people expected it. I think Zhang closed at like a -360 favorite to win, and it was a knockout in the first round or two, and it was light work for Zhang. So now she is the undisputed champion in the, I believe that was the lightweight division for the women. So it's still up in the air who she's going to end up fighting, but it's going to be tough. It's probably going to have to be Rose again to have to knock her off that pedestal. And then you get to the main event, Israel Adesanya, who's holding the belt against Alex Pereira. Pereira had beaten Adesanya, knocked him out twice before in their kickboxing. You know, Adesanya used to be in kickboxing and whatever league that was. Pereira had beat him twice in the kickboxing, but now Pereira came over to fight Adesanya in his ring in the UFC. And after the first 4 rounds, it sure looked like Adesanya was going to be able to get through to a decision. But that 5th round, all of a sudden, Pereira caught Adesanya, and next thing you know, Herb Dean was waving it off, and Adesanya was done. So we had 2 new belt champion holders over the weekend in the UFC. Poirier Chandler had the best fight I think I've ever seen. So huge fights over the weekend for UFC, and it's about time. It's been a couple of weeks since I was able to watch the UFC and really get involved with some big name fights. So this card definitely did not disappoint. And as we wrap up with our fun fact of the week, as we always do, following Sunday's win, Tom Brady has now won games in four separate countries. He's obviously won in the United States. He's won in London when he's went over to England. He won in Mexico City a couple years ago when they played in Mexico City. And just this last week, he has now won in Germany. So it's not enough for Tom Brady to have won, what is it, like seven Super Bowl rings and be the greatest quarterback to ever live. No, he needs to go and win games in every other country now, too. This is probably going to be his last year. I can't see him coming back for another one. He doesn't look all that great, and I'm not really sure how into it he is anymore, but who knows? It's about playoff time. Brady could kick it into gear and win another Super Bowl and come back next year. Who knows? But it's not likely he's going to win in any other state or in any other country, but I do think the NFL, they're trying to go to China. They're trying to go to a couple other countries, so who knows? Brady might just come out of retirement to go win in another country. Who knows? But that's how we wrap up this show. It was a fun one, lots of information, and we'll be back next week. We'll have the Bears with the Falcons, continue to take a look at the NCAA football playoffs, and keeping you up to date with the Chicago Bulls. So until next week. We'll be right back.